The final case for oral argument this morning is in the matter of the petition of Montana Dakota Utilities. For the appellant, Montana Dakota Utilities, is Mr. David Gertis, attorney from Pierre. For the appellee, South Dakota Public Utilities Commission, is Mr. John Smith, an assistant attorney general from Pierre. And for the FEM Electric and the South Dakota Rural Electric Associations, Mr. Robert Ryder, Jr., along with Margo Northrup, who are from Pierre. Mr. Ryder, I understand, for your clients who will be presenting the argument, is that correct? And that will be 10 minutes, and then Mr. Assistant Attorney General Smith, 10 minutes.
Our decision was that I would go first.
Right. But you each have 10 minutes, correct?
Yes.
All right. All right, Mr. Gertis, with those caveats, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court. My name is David Gertis. I'm a lawyer from Pierre. I am with the law firm of May, Adam, Gertis, and Thompson, and I represent the Montana Dakota Utilities Company, the appellant in this matter. I would like to, Mr. Chief Justice, recognize the presence in the courtroom of three representatives of MDU, if I may. Bruce Brecky, Jay Sabo, and Jeff Simon are sitting in the first row of the spectator session. This is an appeal from the Circuit Court of the 6th Judicial Circuit, Hughes County, South Dakota, from a decision of the Public Utilities Commission granting summary disposition to the appellees. The appeal in this matter was timely filed, and the case, generally speaking, occurs under SDCL 4934A56, which is generally speaking known as the large load statute for those of us that practice in front of the Public Utilities Commission. Jurisdictional statement is as set forth in our brief, and we have recited in our brief the fact that, in our view, the question of standing, which has been raised by the Public Utilities Commission, is subject to a de novo standard, and that statutory construction, which this court will be asked to provide, is also under the de novo standard. I'd like to, if I may, just give you a brief recitation of the facts. They're fairly simple. Montana, Dakota has in its service territory the city of Bowdell. Just outside the city of Bowdell and within approximately 1/2 mile of Montana, Dakota service territory, a new customer at a new location was going to build a grain handling facility. That new customer at the new location is North Central Elevator. The elevator would actually be located in the service territory of FEM Electric, which is a rural electric
association. Does the customer participate in these types of proceedings at all?
In terms of the PUC hearing, Your
yeah.
Honor? Yes, the customer is, generally speaking, involved in those proceedings.
All right, and what is customer preference a factor at all?
Customer preference is probably one of the basic factors that's involved in this appeal, and that is the question of what is the character of the customer preference under the large load statute. The large load statute is, as I said, in issue in this case. This case involves statutory construction of just exactly what is the meaning of customer preference under Section 56. I'm going to eliminate the chapter title, and we'll just talk about section numbers because we're only within one chapter of the code. The question, there's two questions actually. MDU was held to lack standing because it is not the customer, and the PUC held that the customer was only the customer may initiate a proceeding under Section 56.
Can I go back to your facts? Can I just go back to your facts? You were starting on giving us the facts.
And, yes.
I just wanted to clear something up. North Central is, you say, is the new customer and new location.
Yes, Your Honor.
But didn't North Central already have an ongoing relationship with FEM?
That's true, Your Honor, in a different location, but not in this location.
So each time an old customer goes to a new location, they're considered a new customer at a new location? How does
yes,
that
Your
work?
Honor.
They are. All right. But that's a little bit confusing. You would think that they would be an old customer at a new location. But the way the PUC interprets that is that they are a new customer each time they have a new location.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. And that's not in dispute, as I understand it.
That either. Was never raised in the case, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And quite frankly, I'm not sure it became an issue in the and it's probably not even in the record whether or not they were starting this new facility under a different legal structure. I mean, it could have been another LLC or something. I really don't know that, and I don't think we ever talked about it in the case.
It's just a confusing issue when I read it because I see that they had an ongoing relationship.
So. I don't think there was ever, Your Honor, I don't think there was ever a dispute before the Public Utilities Commission that this was, in fact, a new customer at a new location.
All right.
I don't think that was an issue. Now, it's true that the case did turn, however, on the question of the standing of MDU because of the interpretation given to the statute by the PUC, and that is that only the customer may invoke the statute.
And the issue of even whether this is a large load, that really wasn't decided either, was it? The whole question goes
that's correct.
To standing.
That's a question of material fact that we think existed and would have precluded the summary disposition of the case had it not been for the standing issue involving MDU.
Thank you.
So
we get down.
So the trial court only gave you the opportunity to argue about standing, whether or not you had standing in court to argue whether or not you could argue the merits. And they said no, so you've not argued the merits.
We've argued the merit. Yeah, that's correct, Your Honor. We've argued the merits of whether or not the statute applies just to the customer, and I think that's really the merits of this appeal here. I mean, everything else falls into place if we answer the question. If the court answers the question as to whether or not invocation of Section 56 is confined solely to the customer.
And is this the first time this has come up in the public utilities, or has this been a long-standing objection? I should not use the standing in my question, should I? But has standing been an issue?
Different kind of standing.
Has standing been an issue before? Or is this something, because obviously these cases have come to this court before, and I don't recall standing being an issue.
I cannot, Your Honor, recall standing having ever been an issue in the years that I've practiced before
so
the
have
commission.
Have they waived that objection before and just
I don't think it's come up. I mean, typically, the typical case that you get gets to the commission because the customer files a petition along with whichever utility prevailed in the bidding war, as you might call it, that happens under the statute. And so I don't think I've ever seen a situation where a utility filed the petition alone. And quite frankly, that's why we're here. We want to know an answer to this question. I mean, the industry does.
So in this case, if it would have been the other way around, would the commission have had to approve it?
If it had been the incumbent utility with the new location, new customer at a new location, yes. Typically, those still come before
either
the
way,
PC. Yes.
Whichever one they select.
Yes.
Even if it's within the territory.
If it's within the territory and it becomes a controversy, quite frankly, had the customer picked MDU, then it might very well have been that FEM would intervene and contest the six factors that are in the statute.
Mm-hmm. Well, wouldn't that same apply then? They wouldn't have standing either.
It's always been held that they do have standing under those circumstances. I'm not sure that this particular configuration has ever come up. And I think that's why I advocated to my client that we should take this up, because we have a perfect storm, if you will, here. We have a situation where it clearly costs more for FEM to extend service than it does MDU. And, of course, we know the admonition of the legislature when this act was passed, and that is it's to avoid duplication and wasteful spending in all segments of the electric utility industry. It says that at least twice in the chapter, and this court has said so many times. And so
the question is, do you, as your client, I should say, as an individual utility, have the right to assert that overriding purpose, or should that be a commission function as far as standing is concerned? I mean, you don't get to go around doing good all over the state, making sure that inefficiencies and costs are eliminated just because you're a utility company.
Well, Your Honor, and of course the FEM raised that in their brief, I believe, if I recall correctly. And the answer is no as a practical matter, because you have the situation of proximity. Here we only have a half a mile involved, but if Black Hills Power wanted to get involved in this thing, I mean, they're too far away that it would be prohibitive for them to install their equipment and their transmission system to provide this service. And so it's self-policing in the sense that the six factors would eliminate Black Hills from the equation right away. And so we don't see that. But that, of course, has been raised as an issue. And again, we say that as a potential supplier, the bordering utility has standing, especially when the customer shopped the project with that utility. Now, had the customer said nothing, this would have been built. MDU would never have been involved, because, as Justice Meyer-Henry pointed out, it is in FEM's territory. And so had the customer not shopped the project, MDU likely wouldn't have known about it, and it would have been built. And we wouldn't even be talking about this statute. But it's our view of it, if the shopping occurs, and believe me, there is a bidding war that goes on here, and if the shopping occurs, then we submit that this statute is involved. Because that's exactly what the Act was designed to prevent, and the Act was designed to prevent some more expensive expansion of the infrastructure as a whole in the state if a more economical way can be found to construct, or to provide, I should say, this service.
I've read your brief incorrectly, but as I understand from your brief, you're saying that you're talking about shopping now being sort of a condition precedent, but as I understand your brief, your MDU, if they had heard about this and decided that they could provide this service cheaper and better, could still petition, as I understand it. But now you're saying there has to be the customer first has to do the shopping and make an inquiry of the outside.
I think there has to be some contact with the customer. That's our view of it. Now, Justice Zinner pointed out or raised the question, well, can the bordering utility file a petition just upon knowledge of the process?
Right.
That could be an interpretation. That's not the one we're advocating, because it doesn't fit our fact situation. It may very well be, depending upon the way the court interprets this statute, that may flow from this process, but the facts we have in front of us here did involve the shopping, Your Honor.
Well, but the standing statute requires either an actual or threatened injury,
right,
or an interest in the subject matter.
Right.
One of the two. And it doesn't make any difference. Shopping, it seems to me, doesn't make any difference to either of those two issues.
Well, Your Honor,
whether there's a threatened injury or whether there's an interest in the subject matter, whether there's been shopping before or not, that isn't relevant to either of those questions, is it?
Well, Your Honor, I think it is because these utilities compete against one another to begin with. They're always looking for a way to expand their load. And the other thing that you have is when they're shopping, the injury, of course, is that if the bargain is not made, and of course the elements of the bargain are set forth in Section 56, or the way you get to the bargain anyway, set forth in 56. As a practical matter, the injury to Montana and Dakota in this case is they didn't get the load when they had the superior offer based upon the criteria set forth in this statute.
So what you're saying then is that that the customer then is actually the one that would give MDU standing here, the bordering utility. The customer asks the bordering utility to make a bid, and now the customer is actually who, if the customer had chosen not to even ask MDU, MDU would not have standing then?
That's what the facts in this case show. Now, I am wiggling a little bit, I'll admit it. And I am wiggling a little bit because I'm not involved in a situation where MDU just heard about it and filed a petition.
Right.
But that's not the fact situation we're dealing with.
But we have to think about that and making a decision.
Yes. I would advocate that this statute only involves shopping. Now, there may be other utilities that don't agree with me, but I think that's a question for another day. I would submit that that appellate, I don't have to tell you how to run your business, Your Honors, but I would submit that appellate courts decide the case in front of them, not the future case that they don't have in front of them. And I guess that's why I have taken that conservative tack. I'm dealing with the facts I have.
So you're arguing if you win this case on standing, then it goes back to the PUC to decide on the merits, whether or not, now that you have standing, whether or not you win on the merits.
Yeah.
Wouldn't there have been a better way to resolve this by, say, an agreement with PUC counsel that the judge decided in the alternative, if there is standing, there's one thing, and also decided on the merits? Or did you not go in prepared to try the whole case on the merits?
Well, back when we were before the commission, Your Honor, we were prepared to try the case on the merits. And of course, there had already been some discovery, as you see from the briefs. And so we believed that the case that we presented, it was in fact the case that should win. And okay. So we did not discuss with counsel an alternative decision.
But okay. If we got to that part of it, we'd have to first determine you had standing.
That's true.
If we decide you don't have standing,
we're out the door. I agree.
You can't even look at the merits.
The merits of...
We couldn't review the merits if we said you didn't have standing.
That's correct. Yeah, I agree with that. But of course, we think that the application of the large load statute, if you go along with the commission, then we have established the first exception to the large load statute.
But my question is, if we determine that you have standing, can then we get to the merits based on if you've made an offer or if you've made, you claim you've put in enough evidence to decide the merits, but the PUC just held you didn't have standing. They didn't get to the merits, right?
Correct.
So it has to go back to them to decide the merits, even though there's all the evidence in the record that... would have controlled the decision on the merits?
Well, you don't have a hearing, Your Honor. You don't even have a hearing, and so I would say it's the same thing as a summary judgment motion in trial court, and it would have to go back for trial.
Okay.
That'd be my view of it.
All right, thank you.
I agree with that.
I want to go back to something that Justice Zinner raised about standing. As I understand it from your brief, you're arguing that standing has to be decided purely from the statutes dealing with the bordering and incumbent utilities. We're not using a civil standard here. We're not going to say whether there's an adverse effect or whether the person has an interest. As I understand your argument, we just look at the statute here, the large load statute. It either gives you standing or it doesn't. Isn't that right?
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay.
Yes. It's a statutory procedure, and I agree that we have to have standing under this, or we're done.
Okay.
So yes, I agree with that.
Mr. Gerdes, I want to make sure there's no misunderstanding about the 2,000 kilowatt issue. Really, that's not a material issue of fact in this case, is it? Because the question of standing is a legal question.
Yes.
That's based on the statute. So whether it's above or below 2,000 really doesn't. It's not really material, because our question is solely a legal question. What does the statute give you as far as standing?
I agree with that, because we get to the 2,000 kilowatt issue when we get to the merits.
Okay.
Of the six factors. See, my time is up. May I finish answering?
If you haven't finished your answer, go ahead.
Because the point being, Your Honor, Justice Center, is that the commission shut everything off at the beginning, and the commission even interpreted the statute so as never getting to the six factors, which, of course, is another thing that we've covered in our brief. So we're just at the start of this thing, and I don't know how to say it any other way. Thank you, Your Honor, and we rely on the arguments in our brief for the matters that I have not been able to cover.
Thank you, Mr. Gerdes. Mr. Smith, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the Court, John Smith, Assistant Attorney General for the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. I might begin where I wasn't going to begin and address the standing issue, because that seems to be the focal point of the Court's interest. And I'd like to clarify something right off the top here, and that is the Commission didn't rule that a competing utility doesn't have standing to participate in these cases. They participate all the time. We have interventions in these constantly. But in our view, at least, this is a plain meaning case. That's really what it's all about. We look at the statute. If you look at the operative language of the statute, let's go back to that. Let's go back to what the statute says. The statute issue is Section 56, and here's what it says. New customers at new locations shall not be obligated to take electric service from the electric utility having the assigned service area where the customer is located. That is the triggering language of the statute. And if you look carefully at the decision the Commission made, what they held is that MDU lacks standing to assert that right. That's what we're talking about here. The right of a customer to avail itself of this statute to seek relief from what otherwise is a prohibition under the Territory Act. And the statute references it totally with respect to the customer. References it as the customer's obligation to take service from the assigned utility. That's the general rule. That general rule is found in Section 42 of the Act.
How does it get before you in this case?
How does it?
If the customer takes it in their service area, would it not normally ever come before you?
It would not normally ever. It's never happened in the history of the Act.
As long as they, right? As long as they go with the utility company that they're in the assigned territory, it would never. It does not need to be approved by the PUC.
No, because you're.
So
you're,
it's only if this statute only deals with utilities that are outside the assigned territory, and then only then does the PUC have to look at it and approve.
That's correct. The way the mechanics of this thing work is, in the general rule, and it's the massive preponderance of loads in the state. It's only this rare occurrence when you have a large load that happens to be situated in proximity to another where effectively there's a competition. The general rule, I mean, the rule that we follow is you stay inside your territory. Mr. Gerdes here talks about the prime directive and a capitalized term. You notice he stays away from the use of the term general rule. And the reason he does that, it's not it. That's not the general rule. This is one of five exceptions to the large to the general rule. There are four exceptions to that general rule. The first of those is Section 55, which allows the utilities to accept from the territorial assignments via agreement, and that has to come before the commission for approval. The second one is this large load statute, Section 56. You have Section 57, which is a utility is allowed to serve its own property, even if it happens to be outside the area. And lastly is inadequate service. A customer can petition the commission to obtain relief if the service it's getting is inadequate. And I would argue with respect to the inadequate service provision, which is another customer-driven exception. I don't believe MDU would have the right to come and petition the commission and argue that somebody's service isn't adequate, that they're getting outside, or that they're getting within their own service territory. That's not the party that the legislature designated as the party for whom it's giving relief. The relief here is afforded the customer.
It could have been clearer, couldn't it? I mean, this statute's a little bit difficult to deal with because they're talking about shall not be obligated. They're using the passive voice here. They could have made it a little clearer if that's what was their intent, that only the customer can petition. So I can understand the problem here that, this statute is not exactly crystal clear on this.
The court didn't think so in the only other case in the history of the statute to come before this court that was initiated by someone other than a customer. Only other case.
Different case, though. I mean, that wasn't the same issue.
It's not the same, but it's more similar than you might think. And basically what that was Northwestern Public Service brought that case as a declaratory judgment. And the court, again, with an argument sort of like MDU is making here, that it means more than it says. It means more than a customer can seek relief from its obligation. There's more to it than that. And it's not so dissimilar, because the arguments that Northwestern Public Service made in that case, and the commission, because it bought that, is this whole business of this statute is meant to be a contest between two utilities. Always. It's not a statute meant to afford relief to the customer from what is otherwise its obligation under the law. It's a contest that government, the PUC, is going to resolve in all cases. And that's not what the statute says. And that's not what this court said in an unambiguous assertion in the Hub City case. And let me just read you what you said. Judge Tim, he's my friend. The plain language of the statute indicates the legislature intended to do nothing more than provide a new large load customer at a new location an option to be exercised prior to the receipt of service. That's what this court said.
Okay, we said that, and as I understand it, there's also no dispute that if the customer exercises the option, MDU or the other utility does have the right to intervene.
That's correct. It happens in every case.
Okay, then tell me this. If the non-service territory utility has a right to intervene in that situation under this statute, why wouldn't they have the right to intervene in the situation we have today? It's the same statute. In one case, you're saying they have a right to intervene. And here we have the same case, same parties, and you're saying they don't.
It may not be quite analogous. I've been racking my brain to try to come up with something that approaches this in terms of a similar situation. But I'll just use an example is the ADEA, Age Discrimination and Employment Act. If you're not 40 years old, you can't bring an action under the ADEA. It's that simple. The intended beneficiary of this exemption, according to the statute's plain language, is the customer. Now, in a case where a utility is going into another utility's territory and taking away what is otherwise its right, if MDU were going into FEM's territory here, it is invading FEM's right, which it otherwise has, and that's the right to provide exclusive service within its service territory. To me, there's nothing in this statute. You cannot read this statute, in my view, to say that it was intended to subject every single large load out there where a customer doesn't want to exercise what seems to be, and I'll admit it, it's a backwardly written statute. It is. But that's what it says. It says new customers at new locations shall not be obligated. It doesn't say anything about utilities not being assigned the service area do not have to follow the exclusivity provisions if. It just doesn't say that. It gives a customer a right to petition the commission for relief from what is otherwise a prohibition that it must live under. That's the natural order of things. The normal order is you serve every load in your service area. And I might point out the legislature, Mr. Gerdes's prime directive, look at Section 55. When it's a matter between utilities, when it was intended to be that, the agreement section, the legislature put that in there. They didn't do so here. And we must presume they knew what they were doing, and they left it out intentionally.
Your time has expired, Mr. Smith.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ryder, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Good morning, Chief Justice. Justices Bob Ryder. I'm an attorney from Pierre. I'm with Margo Northrup, one of my partners, and Darla Rogers, another partner, was on the brief on this matter, Your Honor. We represent FEM Electric Association and the South Dakota Rural Electric Association. And following Mr. Gerdes' initial comments, I would also advise the court that this morning with us are representatives of both of our clients, Your Honor, as well. This is an important issue for all the parties involved. Your Honor, if I could, before I get into my argument, I wanted to respond to Justice Zinner's inquiry because I think the difference between intervening that a utility can do when they're out of territory utility, they can intervene if the customer has first initiated the proceeding. So there's no proceeding to intervene in unless the customer initiates it. Only at that time, if the customer initiates, only at that time is there actually a proceeding in which an interested utility can intervene. And
but they have an interest. They have an interest in the, under the statute in that case, but not in the case we have today. And it's the same statute and same parties.
If I might respond, though, Justice, there isn't a proceeding to intervene in.
Okay.
There isn't a proceeding. It's just as Justice Meyer Henry indicated. If, in just in this case, I mean, it's our territory, FEM's territory, the customer was satisfied with FEM and wanted to do business with us, there's no proceeding. There's nothing the Public Utilities Commission has to do to allow that transaction to take place. There was a contract executed between the parties. The parties agreed that this was the type of a service that's going to be provided, and that was authorized. And the reason it was authorized is back in 1975, Mr. Gerdes put some history in his brief, some that he has shared with his members. But clearly what happened in 1975 was the legislature decided that they were going to make a resolution of these issues so they didn't have these disputes all the time about whose customer was it and whose customer isn't it. What they said was they passed Section 42, which needs to be read together with 56. And what they said there was, all right, as between the utilities, here's the deal. Here's what happens. The utilities have their territories assigned to them under Section 42. And when you walk away, utilities, from the legislature and from the meetings you have and then from any issues you have with the Public Utilities Commission regarding the territory arrangements, once that's all done, then you are satisfied, and that's the end of the ballgame for issues between utilities, unless and until, as Mr. Smith indicated, they contract otherwise and the PUC approves the contract. So that's what occurred. That's what has occurred. But what the legislature did is they gave opportunities to the customer. In Section 56, they gave an opportunity to the customer that if the customer, and Mr. Smith gave you the language, but the customer can initiate a proceeding to request that there be another provider for them. Or in 58, if the customer isn't being served properly, then the customer can say to the PUC, I'm not being served adequately, get me a new utility. But those are all customer rights. The utilities issues were resolved when Section 42 got passed and what occurred after it as far as the assigning of territories. And this court said in the Wilrott case that Mr. Gerdes cites, and so do we, that that's constitutional, that the assignment of territories was proper. And that's the general rule Mr. Smith talked about, was that territories are assigned for these utilities, and we have our territory, and they have their territory. You know, this the same thing could happen to us that happens to MDU in this case. There can be a situation in the future that it's outside of our territory, so we try to come in and serve that area when the customer hasn't asked for it. If Mr. Gerdes's argument would prevail today, we could do that. But the reason we're here today and the reason SDREA is here today as an organization is because that's not what this legislation indicates. That's not what the legislature intended, and that's an improper reading of Section 56 to grant some rights to a utility outside of the territory. And one of the issues that the court brought up and one of the questions to Mr. Gerdes was, well, what would make a difference on MDU in this case versus some Black Hills Power and Light or an REA down in southeastern South Dakota deciding that they could come in and petition? I mean, clearly, under Mr. Gerdes's argument, that if a utility can petition or initiate a petition, then any utility can do it. And clearly, that's not what the intent is. I mean, there has to be some parameters, and the legislature set these parameters.
What about a shopping argument? He's trying to limit that broad potential problem by saying it's only going to apply in shopping cases.
And Justice Zinner, I heard Mr. Gerdes say that, and I'm thinking, where in the statute or where in any decisions of this court previously is there any language that says only if the customer shows some interest and goes around and tries to shop prices is there the opportunity for an outside utility, out-of-territory utility, to initiate the proceeding? And there's nothing that would justify that argument. That would just be, I believe, MDU's effort to say that these are unique circumstances and you ought to fashion some sort of language that would resolve this unique circumstance. But if you approve this, you're painting with a broad brush. The argument that they've made wouldn't allow otherwise. Now, one of the things that's important to this is, as we indicated, that 42 was intended to resolve the issues between the utilities. These other statutes are for the customer. Well, place yourself in the customer's situation. Carlisle Richards, the lawyer for the customer, he joined our brief in this matter. He intervened as well. He ceded his time to argue today to me, so I could do that. But put yourself in the position of the customer. Here they have made an arrangement with their provider in their territory, in that territory, to provide this additional electric service for them because they've got a big plant that they want to get up and running. And what happens, unfortunately, is that if any utility can come in and initiate a proceeding, they can halt the progress that North Central wants to make up there. Because unless and until there's a final determination made, We don't know if we're going to be the ultimate provider of electricity. MDU doesn't know if they're going to be. So why do we spend the money to ramp up, so to speak, for North Central? So North Central gets their handcuffs. They're handcuffed by this proceeding, and it would occur in any case because there can't be a business judgment made because somebody can start the proceeding, and until it gets resolved, they're not going anyplace. They're not getting the economic development they want to do isn't getting done because of the effort of a utility that is outside of that territory.
I think the delay is a very good argument on your point, but what about the situation of the cost inefficiency? If it were going to, in this case, cost 20 times as much for your client to supply this electricity to the new customer, 20 times as much as it would be for Montana Dakota to do it. Doesn't it make sense that the statute would be trying to include that so that the PUC has to make a decision as to the economic feasibility of doing this?
Justice Sabers, understand, at least from my perspective, that when you do move lines out to a new facility, we'll say, or bring additional energy out there, that you have other customers because this is your territory. So it's not just that you have one customer sitting out here by itself. The fact that I bring additional loads or additional opportunities to that customer allows me to provide better for the other customers in my territory as well. And we were talking about this yesterday when I met with my client, and we talked about the fact that, you know, when we bring that out there, it's going to help the customer down the road that's in our territory and other customers. So if you look...
So there are side benefits, even though it's going to cost 20 times as much as it would for the other utility company to do it.
Yes, Your Honor, and 20 times, I realize that's to try to make a point for us, but in this case, you know, costs never really... there was never really any true determination of what the costs were. That's an argument that has been made, but I believe the important part is that when the legislature passed 42, they said, we're going to make these territories because then when you do move lines out into your territory, it's not going to be like Black Hills Power and Light moving one over from Rapid City. It's going to be in your territory that you're serving, and that's where the economies arise.
Your time has expired, Mr. Ryder. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Gerdes, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. I need to ask the court to look at that section of our brief that talks about the context of the statute. As we said in our brief, number one, that Hub City case was decided based upon a supposed retained right of the customer, and that's the context of the quotations that talk about the applicability of the language, and we're dealing with a different situation here. We're not talking about a retained right. We're talking about use of the statute in the first instance. The second thing I'd like to mention is none of the appellees want to talk about the other half of the statute. You notice Mr. Smith talked about new customers, new locations, located outside municipalities, with a contracted minimum demand, shall not be applicated, and then he quit. There's an if here. Shall not be obligated if, and then you've got to go through all of this other stuff. Now, why do they put the preference of the customer down here if the customer can veto the whole thing by not ever signing the petition? All they have to do, like Mr. Smith said, all they have to do is just sit there and get their power from the incumbent utility. Why would someone sign a petition if they're already going to get the power? That's why this statute is here. This statute is here to deal with those situations where there are contending utilities looking to provide that load. That's the context of this statute. You have to put this statute in pari materia with the other statutes in the chapter. And so we have to deal with all the words of the legislature. And of course, as you know, this court has said that in several of these cases, that we have to give effect to all the words in the statute. And if we can do so, we have to take all of the words that the legislature used at face value and give effect to the statute based upon the purposes we understand it. Now, so I would submit that they're not talking about the same statute I am.
But the purpose then would change under your analysis of it to competition for large customers.
Yes, and that's exactly...
As opposed to signed territories.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, Your Honor, that's exactly why the statute's in there. Another point that I'd like to raise, talking about Justice Zinner's point, and I would agree with what I think Justice Zinner was saying when we talk about comparing this situation with the situation where you have the large load statute being invoked and then the out-of-territory utility intervening, and that is you have to have the same standing to intervene that you have to initiate a petition. So it's a very good point to say that, you know, if that out-of-territory utility can intervene in a proceeding involving the incumbent utility, you have to have that same standing to initiate a petition. Look at the PUC's rules. They have rules on that. And that's what it talks about. So that's another argument in favor of Montana-Dakota being involved in this thing. I need to say one other thing. Mr. Smith tried to compare Section 55 with, or excuse me, 56 with this situation. Section 56 is a completely, that's the one where the service is inadequate. Section 56 is initiated by the commission itself. There's no petition. It talks about if the commission, not 56, excuse me, 58, adequacy of service. It talks about the Public Utilities Commission may, after hearing and upon due notice, make such findings and assign another utility. It doesn't require anybody to file a petition. Again, we have to take all of these statutes in context and read them in pari materia. And I would submit that this statute has to mean something. 56, Section 56, has to mean something. And the way that the appellees are interpreting it, it really means nothing. Because this is designed to address the situation where you have two utilities competing for a customer, one outside the area and one inside the area. And quite frankly, I believe the reason this statute is in there is so that the REAs would have a shot at a new large load that is coming in just over the city boundary where the public utility is, and in the same sense of the word, to give the public utility a shot at a new large load that's just over the boundary in the REA's territory. That's what this statute was put in there for.
What do you buy?
It was intended to resolve a competition.
What about Mr. Ryder's argument that this would give a competing utility the right to postpone, delay the proceedings? They could actually put, you know, timing is crucial at times in economic opportunities. They could almost, if they were working in bad faith, they could say, you know, if you don't come with us, if you don't petition to come with us, we're going to postpone you till hell freezes over. What about that argument?
Your Honor, number one, I'd say that is part of what we have to pay for the prime directive. The second thing I would say is, in Mr. Ryder's case, it's my understanding the facility is built. So that's not even an issue here. And that's outside the record, but I believe that that's the case.
But there's always a next time. What happens?
Yes, okay, and there is a next time, and you're absolutely right, Your Honor. Then I think that's part of the price we have to pay for litigation of this type, no matter where it resides. That's part of the price we have to pay for the fact that the statute exists there. I mean, you don't have to talk about public utilities. You can talk about anything else. You can talk about my neighbor wanting to build a convenience store that I don't like, but is zoned within it's within the province of the zoning authorities to permit it to go forward. I can still start a lawsuit and slow them down without regard for anything that's in Chapter 4934A. I mean, that's a fact of life in the United States of America, unfortunately. And that's why our European friends think we're too litigious. But we like our system, and it protects everybody's rights, including the utility that thinks it has the superior product under the conditions of the statute, the outside, the non-incumbent utility coming into the incumbent utilities.
Mr. Gertz, though, if your argument holds true that they have standing because they have a superior product, even though this case is limited by its facts, aren't we going to create the old proverbial nose in the camel's tent? You're going to have a license to invade territories any place in South Dakota as long as what you call the prime directive is your, as long as you can prove a prime directive case, then you, under your argument, you have standing to do this any place.
If you take the extreme situation, that's correct, Your Honor. But again, I'm confining my argument, as I said earlier when you and I were talking, to the facts we have. Those are the only facts that exist now that we can decide this issue.
But we know that language from our opinion will be used in the next case.
Then you'll have that one to decide, and that may be a different matter.
The bottom line is here, we have to answer the question, what was the legislature's purpose behind this? Was this a peacemaking statute, or was this a competition statute?
Yes.
That's the bottom line, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. I agree with that, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gertz.
I'm sure that we enjoyed our day in court.
Well, you did. Court's in recess.